in America to tell the story of these public figures who you know so intimately, who you know as mom and dad?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was a big part of why I wanted to do this, is because I obviously know them very well, and I've seen my whole life the different public stories that are out there about them. And I wanted to tell a story that was about the people I know, not just my parents, but their friends and comrades, these people who in some ways have been represented in the media for 40 or 50 years, but I think we've never really actually understood what drove them, what made them want to, you know, kind of conduct the struggle in the way they did, what radicalized them. And so for me, it was about understanding my parents, helping my daughters understand my parents. And I think people who listen will not only get a sense of the history, but even if you know the history, I don't know that anybody has seen, you know, has actually heard these people at length discuss why they did what they did and what brought them to that place in their lives.
Zayd Ayers Dorn, creator and host of the new 10-part podcast series Mother Country Radicals from Crooked Media and Odyssey, featuring his parents, the former Weather Underground leaders Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers. The series has been a top 10 podcast in the country. People can listen to the whole thing now, the whole series, for free on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll link to it at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresaina, Tammy Warner, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Massoud, and Mary Conlin. Our executive director, Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
To your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 104.3 points south along the Willamette River Valley, and the Columbia River Valley, it is 91.9. Everywhere else, KBOO.FM. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to give you the numbers right now for you to check in when we actually start asking questions. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And we have a special guest with us today. Cecil will be along presently. And I want to welcome Cecil Hutter. We're going to talk about the Hiroshima Memorial and the event that will be taking place August 6th, I believe. Is that correct, Cecil?
It's August 8th. Thank you for having me, Celeste and Cecil. Yes. Uh-huh. Hiroshima, yes. Remembering Hiroshima and Nagasaki is August 8th, because on August 6th, there's quite a few community events that were planned on that same day, so in order to not conflict with them, we held it on August 8th, which is Nagasaki Day.
Okay, so before we get any further, although we've interviewed you and had the pleasure of your company many times, would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the work you do and how it connects to Hiroshima and Nagasaki remembrances?
Well, yes, thank you. I've been here several times, and I'm currently the creative director of the Japanese American Museum of Oregon. I'm also on the advisory committee of the Physicians for Social Responsibility, and it's that organization that has been creating these Hiroshima Days for many, many years now. And as an artist, as a performing artist, I have created numerous performances and poetry and, you know, speeches for Hiroshima Day. My grandparents on my mother's side immigrated from Hiroshima in the late 1800s to Oregon, so that's part of my family connection. But I also have just been an anti-nuclear activist for quite a few years.
Well, I understand that as we are becoming more and more familiar with all of the health risks for our technological progression, that we're finding out more and more not only about how traumatic that was, but how important it is to remember the lessons that were learned and should have been learned. And so a lot of people are probably already very familiar with Physicians for Social Responsibility, but just in case we have some newcomers here, tell us a little bit about them and your role with them.
So I don't really know. I'm not counting the years, but I've been involved for several decades with the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility, because it is a national organization. There's a very active Washington chapter. But the Oregon chapter has been focusing on these days, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they also do a lot of climate work. And I would suggest, if people want to know more about all of the work, because it's really too much work for me to break it down for everybody, they can go to the PSR, the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility website. It's a wonderful group of people. They're doing necessary and important work in the world right now, not only around climate, but, you know, protecting all of us.
Well, not just protecting all of us, but educating us too.
Exactly.
So that we understand what we're working with and why we're working. So now, one of the last times we had you as a guest, this was an event that you talked about. So are there any new changes that have come about since the last time we had your company here?
Well, there was a TPNW, passage of a bill, but I might be incorrect about that, that was looking at limiting the amount of nuclear weapons in the world. And we know it's a very complicated issue. I mean, we know that there's, you know, activists on the side of reducing the amount of nuclear weapons, but there's also, you know, other issues that are involved with this, such as, you know, in Oregon, we have Hanford, which is the place where the plutonium was actually created for the Hiroshima Nagasaki bombs. And near that area is, you know, is Richland, but also affected were the Umatilla tribes. And Kathy Sampson Kruse will be one of our, she'll be doing a land blessing and prayer for us on this special day of remembrance. And there's been so many, they're known as downwinders, people that have been affected by the process of nuclear, but also the bombs, the testing of the bombs, not only in the Marshall Islands, but all around. We're in fact going to honor one gentleman. This year is a little bit different because we're starting an award for, there's been people who have just worked and worked and worked over the years on this particular issue. And Harvey Thorstad is a atomic veteran, and he's the past president of Vets for Peace, our Portland chapter. And we're going to honor him for all the work he's done over the years. And also Michiko Kornhauser will be recognized. She's what we call hibakusha, or a survivor of the atomic bomb. And I believe she's in her mid-80s, if not older than that. So I think, you know, the connection to today is really about being aware of this is not something that happened in the past. This is what we're dealing with today. You can, you know, we could talk about Ukraine, you talk about the, you know, the nuclear reactors that are now on the planet are just as, you know, just as possibly devastating as a nuclear bomb.
Well, we could not just talk about what's going on in Ukraine. We could talk about the latest threat of nuclear use if we have one of our legislators go to Taiwan. And that was announced as well. So it's a threat that we live with daily, whether we remember that or not. I understand that you're also going to have some people from the Marshallese Community Association. And can you talk a little bit about that connection? Some people may remember that they've been in some of the environmental summits because the Marshall Islands are threatened by climate change and the rising sea level. But can you speak a little bit more to the historic relationship to Nagasaki and Hiroshima?
Well, you know, the testing of the atomic bombs was important not only toward the development of the Hiroshima-Nagasaki bomb, but after that as well. And a lot of the testing happened in the Marshallese Islands, in the waters surrounding those islands. And those waters are actually where, I believe, the most, you know, beautiful reefs in the world exist, or the most reefs, period. Exist. Yes. And so it's really in danger of the water levels increasing, of the islands basically disappearing, of an entire people's way of life being taken, their traditional ways. And so it's the direct result of the nuclear testing that these islands have been affected. There's quite a large Marshallese community around Salem and also in Portland, which I think is good to know. This is not like the people that are way over there. These are the people
that... Right, local community.
Yes, these are people that live with us. And the Marshallese dance group that will be performing on Hiroshima Day is a group of younger people, and they'll be sharing one of their dances with us. So we're excited about that.
For those who are just tuning in, you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. We are speaking with Jisal Hata, who is representing Physicians for Social Responsibility, and is speaking of a joint event that is taking place on August the 8th. And we're talking about the remembrance of the bomb that was dropped, the nuclear bomb that was dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in Japan, and still working to build toward not only nuclear justice, but more importantly, total limiting, if not removal, of nuclear weapons. Cecil and I are welcoming her to encourage you to not only remember lessons, as I said, that were learned and should have been learned, but if you've got any questions about the historic moment and where we are now, be sure to give us a call. The number is 503-231-8187. And before we go in, I want to circle back into something. My ear caught it, but I didn't catch it in time. When you said GPNW, that is not the Great Pacific Northwest.
Oh, no, TPNW, the TPNW. Yeah, and right. I'm sorry, I Treaty for Nuclear... Yeah, I don't have that in front of me right now. There's a lot of, you know, like in every...
Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
Thank you so much,
Thank you,
Cecil. Yeah.
I had to. I was trying to scroll back to my article there. Okay.
Yeah. I also wanted to raise up that we are on August 8th. That's Monday. And it's going to be at 6 p.m. held at the Japanese American Historical Plaza along the waterfront in Portland. And again, you know, this is at 7:02. There'll be a moment of silence because that would be the exact time that the Nagasaki bomb would have been dropped, because Japan is a day ahead, so it would be 11:02 August 9th, which would be 7:02 our time on Monday.
Well, thank you so much. And we have a caller online, so let's go. No, we do not have a caller online. I'm sorry. I misread Ray's signals. Earlier, you mentioned just a few minutes ago in terms of the Marshallese communities that live here in our region and the Marshallese youth dance troupe. I wonder, and it brought to my mind in terms of our historical memories are short, what are ways in which we make the reality of what happened 60, 77 years ago, a reality for a world in which it seems so long ago, and the relationship between our world and the dangers we face, and make it real for a new generation. For so long, for generations, we live with the fear of nuclear destruction, and it's in the back of our memory banks, but it's not a reality, existential reality for many people. What are ways in which we might make it a reality and encourage people to gain information and to find ways to offer alternatives to this type of reality?
Well, thank you, Cecil. I had mentioned before that, you know, while this happened many years ago, and the only time that an atomic bomb has been dropped on a country, instantly killing, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, we are living, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, and I know people want to cover up their ears and, you know, they don't want to hear, but I talked about the effects of Hanford. The production of plutonium, the health risks and the health effects of being near the production of plutonium. And, you know, we call the people that have suffered, and these are people that have, you know, not just native people in Umatilla, but people that lived all around that area, downwinders. So they're downwind of the production of that uranium, they're definitely affected, their health, cancer, all types of cancer. And the reality is that, you know, as I mentioned, with the nuclear waste that's held in Hanford, I want people to kind of think about what happened in Fukushima not too long ago, right? That was a nuclear situation. And Hanford is on the Columbia River. And the Columbia River is near us, right? And so there's a direct effect there. Also, in the Pacific Northwest, we have probably, I forget the statistics, but it's like, I don't know, I think it's close to half of the nuclear weapons that exist in the world. If you're familiar with Bangor Military Base, outside of Poulsbo, Washington, it's where the Trident submarine was first created and still lives. The amount of nuclear weapons that we have, the amount of nuclear catastrophes that could happen through the reactors, not just bombs, but the melting of the reactors or the them being targeted in some way is so real. But like many other things, it's almost like we don't want to know that reality. This is like on the far end of the worst possible outcomes. And I want to just underscore, organizations like Oregon Physicians for Responsibility, Washington Physicians for Responsibility, Ground Zero, which is in near Poles Bowl, Washington, that are doing the work to not only educate, but, to continue to protest and resist the fact that these weapons are being created, they're being housed. They don't go away. They don't. They don't. Yeah.
One of the things that's really frightening is we show such lack of foresight. We can create these weapons, but we have no idea how to dispose of them. We're not even spending enough appreciable time or money trying to learn how to dispose of them safely. So you're right. The threat never goes away, even if all you do is just make the weapon.
Well, we'd probably be talking here for about 4 days about the military industrial complex, about the capitalist society that we live in. It can be so overwhelming. So this day that we're bringing people together is really to remember the importance of what we value in what we have, in the humanity that we have and that we share. So while there be all the statistics and all the information, we're going to just lift up the day and gather in community and share with, Kathy Sampson Cruze, who will be there from the Umatilla Yakima group. We're going to really be graced by, oops, I shouldn't have used that word because that's part of their name. But anyway, uh-huh. We'll be excited to listen to the Grace Gospel Quartet. And that's LaRonda Steele, Arietta Ward, yeah. Marietta Callier, uh-huh. and Amy Lesage with the Mark Steele, which is a wonderful gospel choir that lifts the spirit of through their singing. We have another group, Michiko Kornhauser, who is the Hibakusha that we were honoring this year for her years of work, is also with a singing group that's called Hyu Gohan. And there's a song that's performed in Hiroshima about this time, and people can come and learn that song. They can sing together. It's about joining hands. We're bringing really close to my heart, a Japanese traditional dance group called Tsubakibuyo Dokukai. And they're the lineage to Sohomi Tachibana, who was one of the, still is, I mean, she's still around, is one of the most influential dancers of traditional Japanese dance in the world, and she's been honored even by the government of Japan. Portland Taiko will be there. So it's I think a great time to gather together, meet new people, and also learn about what we are facing, even with small nuclear reactors. I mean, there's so many issues. It's like anything else. Once you get involved, you go down the deep road of knowing how complex and how important these issues are.
Well, you brought up, I think, an important issue in terms of, it seems as if we can be overwhelmed by the reality and the fact that these weapons exist, that these reactors continue. But in describing the events of that day, you highlighted community and cultural resistance. How important is that in terms of sharing and resisting the power of nuclear weapons? I imagine that, you know, we can talk all day, but there's something about the power of music and art and dance that transform our reality and the way we see things.
Absolutely, and we need our hearts to be strong, individually, collectively, because this is one of many issues that we're facing with our world today. You know, I mean, it can be debilitating to think about, you know, the changes that have been occurring rather rapidly, right, to our world and what we see happening to humanity. So I think that those of us that really, and I feel like it is everybody, but it's like tapping into that creative place, that place that, you know, wants to survive and be and respect each other and celebrate each other's differences. And sometimes in this country, it's getting lost, right, with all the, I mean, COVID doesn't help either, but we've been challenged in many, many ways. And for me, this period of time that we've gone through, and I just want to kind of talk about that because it's not over. We're still right in it. And it has brought up for me personally understanding a little bit more about what my parents experienced, because they were two of 125,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans who were incarcerated during World War II as a result of the Executive Order 9066. And the average time that they were in prison camps, I mean, the guards were pointing guns at them, not trying to keep the bad guys out, you know. They lost everything. The 4,000 Japanese Americans from Portland even had to sell their homes, sell their businesses. The average age of people that went were, you know, in their 60s. They had built their lives. And, you know, those 3 to 5 years that they were in concentration camps changed their lives in ways that, you know, has had me reflect on our 3 years. Mm. And it's not even close. You know, we could go to the store, we could drive our cars, we could see family if we wanted to, we could talk to them at least. I mean, this was a period of time that, you know, I can speak for myself personally that, you know, my parents were in Poston, Arizona, and that was one of the 10 concentration camps that were built by the U.S. military at the time to supposedly protect us from, you know, the bad people, the spies, yes. Which they never found any case of that. And I think it all fits into that historical context of what we are not taught, what we do not know about each other's cultures, or I guess conversely, like, who has decided what we get to know?
Yes.
But there's a lot that's been left out. There's a lot of cultures that have been left out. I mean, the African American, Black Lives Matter, all that we're seeing now around racism in America is it's connected to all this. They're not separate issues. They're all, I mean, I just really see them as the same.
Right. Well, you raised.
I really appreciate you raising that point, because not only was this a crime in that you did not have anything remotely like due process, and communities and families lost their property and they lost community, but the problem is we still haven't learned the lessons yet. And I just want to echo that again, because we see a lot of this resurgence left over from those days and some of these concerns about Asian communities being attacked out of ignorance, out of fear, and out of being demonized. And so it's really important to have these moments of coming together and having these spiritual connections, these heartfelt connections, so that we not only remember the horror of war, but we remember the horror of separation and demonizing each other.
Yes, thank you so much for that. It's we have to protect our humanity during all of this time. I think, you know, a lot of awareness has been raised up, but there's still so much work to do. And I don't want to be pessimistic and think that it doesn't matter how much work we do. It's mm-hmm. not going to make a difference. I know there are people that believe that, you know, that, you know, things like critical race theory and what we want to be teaching and what kinds of choices we have in our lives. And it's just totally connected. But, you know, we have this place that we call America, and I don't know, I guess I haven't totally given up on the dream that it could be.
Could be. Well, one thing that you mentioned, and I'm not sure how, well, I'll put that aside in terms of the dream and my feelings towards it, but I think one thing that you mentioned, why it's important to remember, you compared, you know, these last 2.5 years with COVID, with the experience of the older generations in the concentration camp. And I think it's important because, you know, I had a conversation with someone recently and they said, oh, these are horrible times. It's like, it's never been like this. And I was reminded, well, maybe it's never been like this for our generation. But other generations, other cultures have experienced things and were able to resist. So I think it's important for us to remember and to learn the lessons. So I am grateful for the annual remembrance, you know, every August. Yes, let's remember. And as older generations pass on, you know, there are a few voices of people who lived, and we need to lift up those voices and listen.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we look at the survivors of the Japanese American camp experience, and they're all in their 90s, and I'm amazed at how many people are still alive in their 90s. I feel like it's a type of resistance that, you know, they've outlived the people that did these things to them.
That is so powerful. Yes, it is.
It is powerful.
Resistance.
It's not just resistance, though. It's resilience.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I want to speak to that because it's analogous to the whole energy that you're putting together in this event. You know, it's staying strong in the face of adversity and celebrating those very important human moments. And so a lot of people like this, what they feel is hardcore, real protest. But sometimes you need to have that quiet spiritual protest, you know, to help give you the strength to keep going with your body and your mind. I said, that's enough. That's enough. You know, you need your spirit to stand up and fight back. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland. And speaking of resisting and fighting back, if you are interested in how you can fight back in general, and then specifically in general, support your community KBOO gym. You know, support the fact that you have a media outlet that gives you information, facts, and entertainment that helps shape not only your resilience, but your resistance. And then more specifically, take advantage of the opportunity to reflect and renew this August 8th at 6 p.m. and celebrate this remembrance. The event that we're talking about takes place at, it is co-sponsored by the Physicians for Social Responsibility, and it's remembering Hiroshima and Nagasaki, building toward nuclear justice. And it's going to be at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at the Waterfront Park. And you've mentioned some of the performances that are going to be there, and that you're also going to be honoring and giving awards. Is there any keynote speaker that's going to address some of the points that we've mentioned today, as well as maybe some others from other perspectives? Will there be anybody making it like a keynote speech there?
We don't have specifically a keynote speech this year because we have so many different groups that we're bringing in, but we have a new employee with the Physicians for Social Responsibility who's going to be the MC. So a lot of what needs to be said in terms of education will be incorporated into his talking and kind of transitioning from one group to another. And also Yuki Kawano, who is a third generation Hibakusha, will be speaking. And but, you know, she'll probably talk. She's going to note at 7:02 the actual time. And so we'll have a silent moment for Nagasaki and remembering that. But I also wanted to say, you know, that we've lost more people in this country than we did in Hiroshima with COVID, right? With this last few years of COVID. So I think people can look at it as an opportunity to come together for healing as well as resistance, right? Of healing and gathering energy from humanity, from our humanity that day. So I invite people to please come.
Speaking of COVID, are there COVID precautions or concerns that people want to consider before they attend or as they attend?
Well, it is outside, and so we generally have around 100 people, but, you know, I think that it's probably wise to even wear a mask. I think it's people's comfort, yes. You know, being outside. But that's one good thing about it being at the plaza.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Excellent. And for those who are not able to join in person, I understand that it will be live streamed on the Oregon PSR Facebook page.
I believe so, yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Excellent. So I would maybe like to shift the conversation a little bit because of something I heard earlier in terms of how do we continue to not only resist but to speak out against the dangers of nuclear weapons and the stockpiling of them. One thing that people are concerned about today is the reality of climate change. And what we hear often, what I hear often, is in terms of how nuclear energy, nuclear plants, might be a way in which we could alter the direction that we are going. Any thoughts or perspectives on how we view nuclear power in this age, where we're looking for ways in which to maintain our lifestyle?
I think that there is a lot of talk that's confusing around this particular issue. Anything that involves the creation of the nuclear process is a danger. So the small nuclear reactors are just as dangerous as the larger ones. So I think that the thing that's going to, you know, there's not an easy out, I guess is what I would say. But what I've learned in, you know, being on kind of the side of resisting and taking action towards the elimination of nuclear weapons is, which is the most inspiring thing to me, is what do we want the world to look like? So the activists years ago, when they went to Bangor military base, or where they're doing the Peace Fleet up in Seattle, where they're blocking, you know, nuclear submarines from going out, is they would go, you know, they would cross the fence, they'd cross the line. It's a little bit harder today, but this is what they used to do, and have a picnic on the military grounds, because that is land for everybody. Yes. That is land that we want to have our families enjoy time together. We want to, you know, have a place where communities gather. And so one of the ways to protest is to imagine what we want the world to be and act as if it is that. And I think that's a very powerful, you know, action, not only by the Peace Fleet and the people up in Bangor in Ground Zero work that's being done, not to confuse what the Twin Towers was called Ground Zero, but Ground Zero is the point of impact of the atomic bomb. Yes. In Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So I think the creative imagination is going to be really important, that we create the world that we want to have. And it's just another way, right? We need to do all of it, the resistance, the, you know, education, the remembering, the healing, the building community. But I think when I learned about some of those resistance actions and the people that were involved, it's bold. I mean, we have to be bold.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Another world is possible.
Well, another world is possible, but we have to also remember to call people into account. Mm. You know, we need to remind them that these weapons that they use, they have fallout, and it's in blowback. And it doesn't just affect your opponent or those with whom you have an issue. It affects your children too. There's no bunker that's going to keep the world safe.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
There isn't.
No.
We don't have another planet.
You can talk to Harvey about that, being an atomic veteran. Mm. He'll tell you all about that experience. I think he was, let me see, he has witnessed 33 atomic airbursts from a distance of 22 miles and was within 22 seconds of being at Ground Zero from an atomic bomb blast. So as a, you know, as a professor and also a commander in the U.S. Naval Reserve, having had this experience of, you know, being an atomic veteran, these are people who were on the front line, right? These are the people that we need to listen to their stories, just as Michiko Kornhauser was there remembering. And it actually, you know, I want to just make this connection. We recently did a press conference talking about and raising up the Asian hate that's been showing itself in Portland. And the thing that actually Michiko personally, now this is a woman in her 80s, has had 3 different events in the past year where it could have been dangerous for her. Wow. These were, you know, people who were coming at her because of her race. And as a survivor of the atomic bomb, she remembers as a third grader that, you know, about 80% of her classmates were gone. But she remembered, run, don't look back, jump to the right or the left if you need to, but just go forward.
Wow.
And if she hadn't have, you know, made these quick decisions in the situations that she just experienced in the past year, by people trying to attack her, by people trying to hurt her.
Wow.
Not to say that that's a good way to learn it, but you know, that kind of quick reaction is probably what really kept her out of harm's way.
Well, I mean, it's overwhelming to hear this older woman, survivor of nuclear bombing in her 80s, has to take those lessons to, in this day, in terms of to save herself from Asian hate and violence.
Well, this is one reason why it is so important to take time out, if you have time, to either go down and celebrate or go to the Oregon's Positions for Social Responsibility Facebook page and take part in this remembrance. You know, I want to say this again. I said it at the top of the show, but I want to say it again just to drive a point home. This is something that occurred in the past, but it's not like we are escaping it. As right now, you're hearing saber rattling from China and threats of using nuclear weapons right now. It's in the news.
It's now. And so, it's definitely now.
Yeah, and we need to recharge and then renew our cries for responsibility, for accountability, for peace. For all of us. And so this is not just a threat from climate change, it's an actual threat from a national entity, a country, and we need to take this seriously as we respond to those who are threatening humanity and seem to have lost control of their own.
I think that humanity also starts close to home, in our home, and how we treat each other. I feel like, you know, I don't know what's happening, but it seems like we're losing some of our humanity and how to take care of other human beings, of how to, you know, walk the path of taking care of each other. And that comes from whether a person is down in the street, if they're, you know, going to be attacked, if they're you know, homeless, if they're whatever challenges they may be facing. I don't know, maybe I'm idealizing it. Cecil, I think there was a time where people would say, I see you need help.
Yes.
May I help you?
Yes. And there's a way, you know, I think you said of demonizing, of you know, not only walking past, you know, the person who needs help, but making them first, by making the other person a them, as a possible threat, someone to be dismissed or ignored or to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
It makes us less.
Yes.
It makes us less. It makes us less brave, less courageous to take the steps that we know we can do to be the best human being to other human beings.
Right. And there was a time, most recent and, you know, currently in terms of the political climate in our nations, but I'm thinking of the former president, and we can speak of any president because they've all had their finger on the nuclear bomb, but in which you know, most recent former president was celebrated by being unashamedly cruel, not only to those who were thought of as so-called enemies of this country, but of political opponents. Makes us less. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we have a call of this morning. Francis, good morning.
Good morning. Hi. I appreciate so much resilient truth tellers. You were just speaking about what's going on right now and the callousness of everyone. Something that this isn't directly about that, but it is. There are people who are very extreme in their thinking, and you kind of described them just a moment ago, who are running for office locally all over the country. And to me, they have no credibility whatsoever, and they shouldn't even be validated. And something that concerns me is that supposedly, I don't know what organizations or what, but Democrats are supporting these people in their primaries so as to think they will have an easy opponent for the Democrat in the general. Yeah. First of all, that's a very dangerous thing to do. But second of all, it is so dishonest. And it is not telling the truth at all. And it is giving validity to something that should have none. And I hope that we can encourage whoever is doing this to stop, because it's not promoting the truth. And if we just bring the truth strongly and boldly, that's all we need. We don't need to be playing these games. Anyway, thank you so much for your call today. I mean, your show today. It's been very touching. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Francis. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO, your community radio station. We are speaking this morning about remembering Hiroshima and Nagasaki, building towards nuclear justice. A day of remembrance, which will take place on August 8th at 6 p.m. in Portland at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Waterfront Park. And there are many stellar performers that will be at the event, and we hope that you will be there actually or virtually on this Admiral Day of Remembrance. We're speaking this morning with Chishal Hatta, and if you have a question or comment, give us a call at 503-231-8187. So, what you mentioned, things that gives you hope, that empowers you to continue on. What do you say to those who are younger, who feel frustrated? I was at a event yesterday, and a number of hip hop artists, and I was looking over to had a conversation with a older person such as myself. And say, well, we really like the music, but their lyrics were depressing, in that there was a lack of hope, a lack of we cannot do anything, a lack of we're paranoid, I think was one of the songs. Are there things that we learn from elders, and that those of us who are now realizing that we are the elders, that we can share with our community, and what lessons do we learn from the survivors that we can share with those who will carry on and generations ahead.
Well, you know, the Z generation is the largest generation since the baby boomers. And if we reflect back how we talked about the world back then, it was similar. And so I think that it's through creative expression. So I think, you know, the music of hip hop, the coming together, it's all very important for younger people and for elders to look at that and to listen to. It's important for us to tell our stories. It's important for us to share our histories. It's important to teach them about food, you know, and share our food and how we used to grow food and the importance of the soil today and the protection of the environment, not just talking about it. And I think that younger people today are more open to some of the more creative possibilities. I think they... I don't know. I just know it within my family. The younger people that are in my family really are taking an active role in creating the world they want to see, which is, you know, I have several people that are active in food production. And I think that's a whole movement. Yes. I'm involved at the Japanese American Museum and looking at the contributions of Japanese Americans to the farming and food production prior to World War II. And the erasure that happened. So it's knowing our history, and I think it's upon us as the elders, right, to share that information, share it through food, share it through story, share it, you know, in whatever ways that we can. And we can't judge them. Well, I mean, we can, but I mean, it's not our world.
Right.
You know,
right,
so I really, mm-hmm. you know, reflect on Khalil Gibran's The Prophet, you know. Our children are, you know, in a world that we will never know.
They belong to the future.
And they belong to the future. And I think that they are hope. I mean, we've seen it through Black Lives Matter movement. We've seen it through, you know, some of the organizing, the different kinds of organizing that has taken place. We've seen it in the Roe v. Wade, you know, work that's being done. All of this, it's, you know, we had people during our time that sat on the sidelines, too.
Yes.
And found it maybe in their own way to make change. But I think the main thing is I won't say it in a negative way. I would say please remember your humanity. And and the contributions of those who came before us, we all stand on the shoulders of, you know, like my parents who experienced racism in this country. We can't, you know, we have to remember those parts of history because it is what hasn't been told fully.
Indeed. And this is a chance to not only have the story told, but even participate in the telling for our own spiritual and emotional renewal. So be sure to either visit personally or watch the streaming event. And I just want to say this again, it's August 8th.
Thank
August
you.
8th.
Monday.
At 6 p.m. Yes.
Next Monday.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And is this, well, this is Portland this time of year, but rain or shine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I think we're going to be good, though.
we'll be good.
Yeah, I was just thinking we're in our drought time, so yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I want to point out, too, that, you know, the Japanese American Historical Plaza, for those that don't know, is also called the Bill of Rights Plaza, which represents... Every Bill of Rights was violated towards Japanese Americans with the issuance of executive order. The place where that park is was part of what we call Nihonmachi, or Japantown. So the 4,000 Japanese and Japanese Americans that lived in Old Town prior to World War II and then were basically disappeared overnight. You know, this is a history that we should all know as Americans, as we should all know the history of racism and slavery and, you know, the Great Migration. We should know all of these stories. We should know how, you know, the laws are affecting the rise of people of color in the jails. I mean, and this information is available. It's so readily available. And we are, I mentioned at the top that I'm the creative director of the Japanese American Museum, so I want to really encourage everybody. It's the only place that's left now that has a Japanese American history in the area that we know as historic Old Town, Chinatown, Japantown. So I invite everybody to come down there. We built a new museum during COVID. You can hear a lot of the stories. You can learn a lot of the history, including, you know, the Expo Center. But, you know, again, just to underscore the invitation of people coming together, bring whatever you need to bring with yourself and any healing or any sharing or being around other human beings in this way of a joyous moment on August
8th. Bring your humanity.
Bring your humanity. Thank you, right. Celeste.
Mm-hmm. Bring your humanity and have it refreshed. Well, we want to thank you so much, Isao, for being here and always being such a strong community advocate and being a staunch KBOO supporter and partner. And we look forward to the celebration, which will be next Monday, 6 p.m. And like you said, bring yourself, bring your spirit, and come to be refreshed.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, both of you.
This is your Community Connection, KBOO Portland. This has been More Talk Radio with Cecil and myself, Celeste. And we will hear you next week. Thanks to our engineer, Ray. And thank yourself for still being here and being decidedly resilient. Bye-bye.